Record. Right. Okay. Hello. Hello. Right. Hello and welcome to the Whenever It Kicks podcast with Jessie Cave. That's me. This is a pregnancy podcast and a general motherhood podcast, but also just a, you know, a woman, me as a person, woman podcast. I am currently 28 weeks pregnant and it's dawning on me that I'm going to be having another baby quite soon, my fourth baby. I mean, I hope I am. I don't take anything for granted, but I thought it would be nice for me to have a place where I can talk freely about how I'm feeling at this stage in pregnancy and perhaps complain a little. That is one of my favorite things to do. I love complaining. It is a good hobby to have. And maybe talk about some things I've read or heard, advice along the way that has helped me. I actually have an extract from a letter that I want to read. And I don't know, if I can think of anything clever, I might say it. But yeah, I just want to talk about all things pregnancy, baby, and what it's like to have more than one child. And a baby at the same time, because it is quite complicated. It's not the easiest thing in the world. I'm speaking quite softly because my current baby, how old is he? He's 14 months old. He's asleep in the cot in our bedroom and I don't want to wake him, but he has a nap usually around this time of day. Sometimes it's 20 minutes long. Sometimes it's 2.5 hours long. I'm hoping today it will be a good 2 hour stint because I need it. Right. So yeah, I'm going to start. Thank you for listening. If you have joined me and if you're not pregnant and you're not, you know, wanting to get pregnant, then, you know, hopefully this is still fine to listen to or not. Maybe you're listening to the wrong thing. I usually do podcasts with my sister, so it's a bit weird to be on my own. Yeah, it would be nice to have someone to talk to right now rather than just myself. But this is kind of a diary and I am a chronic diary keeper. Is that the right word? Keeper? Diarist? I like keeping a diary. Where is my diary? Here it is. Oh, this is audio only. So you can't see it. But I actually am feeling quite stressed at the moment because I have around 4 days of diary entries, which I haven't kept up with. I've written like on post-its, tiny little things that I've got to write down, but I haven't had the time to write them in my full diary. And I feel quite stressed about that. It's just tiny little things that the kids say in the day that are so sweet and uplifting or weird or sad or beautiful in an odd way that I have to document them. And I have now diaries and diaries, stacks of books of their words, which I don't know what I'm going to do with when I don't know, eventually have to sort through stuff. But I reckon that these shelves have some space on them. So I'm going to keep being a diarist. I haven't really recorded anything about this pregnancy because it's just gone by so quickly. And I think for the first part, I was working away, not in the UK, really, really morning sick. And more morning sick than ever, actually. Maybe that's because I'm older, I don't know. But I was filming in Serbia and I couldn't really eat very much. And not that I just kind of survived on rice cakes and bread and anything to kind of soothe the nausea. And it didn't really work. But I think because I was filming away until this was before the 12-week scan, where nothing really feels quite real yet for me. I am such a paranoid person, so I don't really admit that I'm pregnant until quite far along. Like, until I've had the 20-week scan, I don't feel like I can safely tell anyone because I feel too worried that something will happen. I really, really would like to be one of those women who can share really quickly and just have that positivity about it and that hope that the baby's going to be okay and, oh, I'm having a baby in this month or this month and this is going to be my life now and, you know, even to have a name for the baby. And that's actually something we tried this time round, me and Alfie, the father of my children. oh God, he's going to edit this and he's going to hear me say that and he's just going to be so like disappointed in me. Anyway, we decided to name the baby this time around early on. So we actually are calling the baby, you know, the name. And it's really nice, actually, because for the first time, I feel like I've got a little relationship with it. And my brother did that with his girlfriend. They gave the name very early on. And I loved how they were just referring to the baby as, you know, like from day one as the name that she is now. And it's so lovely that you can love something before you've even met it. And I think giving it a name makes it a little bit more real in a way. So I thought, yeah, if I never have another baby, then this is a nice thing to try out. And we do know the sex because I don't understand people who can't find out the sex. That's just, I think that's the, oh my gosh, the willpower not to reply yeah when they say, would you like to know the sex of the baby, is just astonishing. How can you not just say yes? And also because now I've had more than one, I can see on the scans, I can tell what it is. So that's also weird to know that this is what's happening and this is what we're having and this is what we're calling it. And but I think what I would quite like to talk about in a bit more detail in this forum on this private podcast, obviously it's not private, you're listening to it wherever you are listening to it, but just, you know, me in this room talking, is the experience of having a baby. He wasn't premature, but I was induced early and he was in the neonatal unit. So this is 10, who's my third baby, my second son. And I think I'm still kind of reeling from that experience. And as I said, he's 14 months old now. It's not like I gave birth yesterday, but I remember lying there in the room, in the hospital room, and thinking, I don't know what's just happened. So he had been taken away from me. He was already being kind of wheeled up to the neonatal unit upstairs. Alfie had to follow him, obviously, so that he was accompanied. But because of the virus, coronavirus, I mean, obviously, I wasn't allowed anyone else there. And the midwives, I think, were changing shifts at this point. It was about 7:38. It was about 8 in the morning. And I was basically left alone in the room, still bleeding quite heavily. And I think I was just staring at my placenta, which was in one of those cardboard bedpan things. And I just looked at the placenta and this empty room and thought, this is not how it was meant to happen. This is not what I thought it would be. And I think within a few minutes, I felt this strong urge to do it again. And in a strange way, to have a good birth experience that wasn't so, so traumatic. And I think even moments later, after I realized that he was going to be taken upstairs, I already knew that, oh, this is bad. This is a bad experience. This is a trauma. And I've used that. I've not really used that word in my life very much, trauma, but in the last few years I've had to. And God, it's quite, I don't know, it is the right word to use about birth, trauma. It is a huge trauma. And I think so many women don't really talk about that aspect of it. Oh my God, sorry. I just thought I wasn't recording and I just talked for 10 minutes and I thought, well, that's it then. But it's okay. Okay, yeah, that was recording. Sorry. Oh God, I'm new to this. Can you tell? So yeah, trauma. I think I am. I have experienced birth trauma and it would be nice for this time around to go in fully aware of the possibility of having that again, rather than blindly go into birth, assuming that it will be okay. And I think because I was so young with Donnie and had no idea what was happening, and with Margot as well, I just, it, yeah, it was a, I mean, Margot, the birth wasn't traumatic at all. But with Donnie, I was very young and it was, well, I wasn't very young. I was 27. That's not, I was a baby. But I was, for, it just feels like such a long time ago now. So yeah, to give birth to him, it was just all new. And because me and Alfie Belly really knew each other, it, the giving birth experience was just so fraught with awkwardness on my end, because I was just so worried that I was going to look gross and like he was going to see my vagina splayed open and it was not going to be very graceful or elegant. And obviously he wouldn't care at all about that. He's the most relaxed, open, amazing person. But it was still, to have gone from having a one-night stand with somebody to 9 months later giving birth to their child, our child, it was an extreme steep curve of getting to know each other. And I, well, my waters broke 10 days early at a premiere. I think it was a Dracula premiere. But I've tried looking this up on IMDb and I can't find a Dracula premiere that had a lookalike of Hayden Panettiere. The whole movie, I was like, why hasn't Hayden got more lines? She's a big star. And then I realised it wasn't Hayden Panettiere. It was somebody else. Anyway, I leant forward to get some popcorn off the floor because I'm disgusting. And I think that ruptured my waters. And as I was walking out the cinema, they broke. And I thought I was weeing myself and I was laughing. Because it did feel like I was just weeing myself. And you know how you see in films with waters breaking, it's like a waterfall. But this wasn't, this was like drips. And then suddenly I was like, oh, this is slightly embarrassing. But then luckily I was with a friend whose mum was a midwife, and Lily Cole, just name dropping there. Cause she was friends with my friend who I was with. And yeah, it was really weird. So I called up my friend's mum and she was like, no, it does sound like your water's breaking. And everyone was really excited. And I suddenly was like, oh my God. Okay. Well, what does that mean? And it was all I was just so stupid. I had no idea what was going on. Called Alfie, who was watching Liverpool, of course. And I said, I think it's happening. And so I was like, oh, but I really wanted to go for dinner. Do I have time to go to Rose's? I really want some calamari. I wasn't vegan back then. And we basically rushed to UCH and they were like, no, go away until something starts happening. You start having contractions but if you haven't started contractions by tomorrow, say afternoon, then you have to come back because that's a risk to the baby that the waters are, that it could get an infection and stuff. So yeah, we basically had to go back the next day. Nothing had happened and I was induced. And they said, well, because it's your first baby, you probably want an epidural. And I wish I had said no. But I just was so gullible and I don't know, I was afraid and I just went, okay, yeah, okay, I'll have an epidural, which meant that I spent basically an entire day lying down, not feeling the contractions, which were very few and far between anyway, because I was in really early labor because I wasn't meant to be in labor. And very quickly it all happened at about 11:30 at night and suddenly I had to start pushing, even though I couldn't feel anything because that's what the epidural does. And I remember thinking, I'm really glad I've done Pilates, even though I barely did Pilates, but because at least then you had some idea of what it's like to contract your stomach muscles. Not that, you know, you don't need to have done Pilates to have a baby, but I remember thinking, okay, I can feel my stomach muscles, so I can imagine pushing. And it was very close call, but I didn't need any forceps or anything. And he did manage to come out, but I think it was really, really like touch and go. And the midwife, I remember shouting at me, I'm going to have to cut you. I'm going to have to cut you. If you don't start pushing, I'm going to have to cut you. And I was just so terrified. Obviously now I know what that means, but at the time I didn't know that what an episiotomy was. I think that's the word. Sorry if it's not. And then with Margot, it was very simple. I was induced 4 days late because I think I panicked and I thought that she had stopped moving so much, but actually she seemed to be fine, but they broke my waters. Nothing happened. Then I was given a drip, the drip thing, which makes the contractions horrendous. And within 2 hours, she was out. I remember they put the drip in after a few hours of nothing happening after my water's been broken with a knitting needle. And they said, okay, well, you should probably have something to eat now because we're going to put the hormone thing in. And once the contractions start, you won't be able to eat anything and you need the energy for the long labor. And so I had a bite of something. I think it was an almond bounce ball. Oh God, I loved them. And I couldn't even swallow that bite because the contraction had already started and she was out within 2 hours. And my mum and Alfie were in there that time. And that was nice. I remember like really being horrible and shouting and saying, that doesn't help. The air gas in there doesn't help. Doesn't do anything. So yeah, so I had two very different birth experiences. And then with 10, it was just so weird. Sorry, I don't know why I'm talking about this for so long, but I'm gonna keep going with my birth story for 10, because why not? But basically, I had a midwife appointment at 38 weeks, and I'd always measured small with pregnancy. All my babies are, you know, quite small. But basically, they realized at the hospital when I went back on them, I went in because I was feeling tight a lot of the time, but it wasn't like a contraction that was going away. It was just a tightness. And my mom, who's an ex-GP and she's very, you know, clever, and said, you should go in. And so I did, even though I was reluctant to. I went in and I got monitored and they said, yeah, okay, no, I think everything's fine. But you should have had a scan at 38 weeks because you measure small. Why haven't you had a scan? And I think the answer was basically, they had missed it. The hospital had missed it accidentally. I think a lot of women had things missed around this period of time because of COVID, and that's understandable. But yeah, I had a scan that was missed. So they rushed me in for a scan that night. So by this point, I'd been away all day, had a scan at 5 p.m., had the scan. They said, okay, looks like there's borderline amniotic fluid, but it's fine. It's like not, it's not over. It's not abnormal. It's just almost at the line where it's not, you know, normal anymore. But yeah, you can go home. Everything's fine. Don't worry. You can still, you know, carry on. You probably go to the birth center. Everything's cool. You know, wait 2 weeks. Everything should be great. Went home. By this time, it was bath time at home, and I didn't look at my phone for a few hours, which is normal. And because I'm not attached to my phone, you know, I'm not attached to my phone at all. I can just casually go 3 hours without looking at my phone. But yeah, I happened to not look at my phone for about 3 hours. And then when I checked it back at about 9, I had 3 missed calls from the hospital. I only knew it was hospital because I Googled the number. So that was scary. And then when I tried to get through to them, nothing happened because it was 9 o'clock. No one was, you know, I don't know why. So I thought, okay, maybe it's something. They said everything was fine. I'll just go home. So the next morning I woke up and my mum had taken them to school. So I had slept in until 9, which was amazing. I think Alfie was gigging or something. No, maybe not. I don't remember. But yeah, so I slept in until 9, checked my phone, and I had 3 more missed calls from the hospital. So I started panicking. They left me a voicemail this time saying, please call this number urgently. It wasn't urgently. They said, hi there. Please can you call the hospital to come in for your induction? Which was the first I'd heard of it. So I said to Alfie, I don't know if he was there. But anyway, I said, okay, I better call the hospital then. They give me a number which was wrong. So I spent basically an hour trying to get through to someone to find out why I had been called about an induction that I didn't think I needed. Eventually got through to someone and they're like, yeah, there's a slot at 1. Can you come in today? And this was 2 weeks before I was due to give birth. And I really wanted to do it naturally this time. I just really didn't want to be induced. I really wanted to try and have one of those experiences you see in the films of the waters breaking naturally and having like a long labor, but it's like not as extreme because you're not being induced with this drug. And I just really wanted to do it all hippy dippy. Or, you know, sorry if that's offensive to some people, it's not hippy dippy, it's just, you know, natural. Just wanted to be natural. But they were like, it's your decision. It's your decision. You do not have to do it. But if you want to, I think it's encouraged. The doctors think it's necessary because they're worried about the amniotic fluid. That could be the sign of infection. You are measuring small. That shows that maybe something's going on that we don't know what it is. So I said, okay, but I'm meant to be filming an ITV2 sketch show tomorrow. So can I be induced on Thursday by any chance? And they were like, no, which was understandable. So we had to cancel everything, which was fine. Alfie and I drove there via a coffee shop, got a nice oat latte, thought, okay, well, I guess we're having a baby. I guess we might be home by tonight. Exciting. Little did we know that it would be a very long induction process because of a fucking pessary, which I really did not enjoy. If you know what basically to describe a pessary, it's like a steel tampon. And I don't even use tampons, so imagine how traumatic this was for me. A little steel tampon thing going right up to the top of your cervix. And that's meant to make your cervix dilated, I think, because at this point I wasn't dilating at all because I was nowhere near labor. So that's the first thing they do when you're nowhere near labor, which I hadn't needed the prior two times because I was technically in early labor. So try the pessary out. And because of COVID, that old friend, Alfie couldn't stay past 8. So he stayed with me until 8. Nothing had happened. We went for a walk around Pentonville Prison. Is it Pentonville Prison? Oh, no, it's Worm Scrubs because we were living in West London. I think we went for a beautiful walk around a prison. And the pessary was so painful. It was like this weight down. It was like a kettlebell in my vagina. So I thought, well, this must mean something's happening. I kept walking, went back into the hospital. Nothing happened. By this point, he had to go home and he saw the kids. And, you know, I was like, okay, well, I'll call you as soon as I know something, because the partner could only be there during active labor. And at this point, I was still not in active labor. And yeah. Oh my gosh, nothing happened. I watched a whole series with Hugh Laurie, one about, I think, a prison. And then about 5 a.m., the midwife woke me up and was like, okay, you can go downstairs to the labor ward now. I was like, but I'm nothing is happening. What? They're like, yeah, but there's a room free. So just go downstairs. So got downstairs. They were like, okay, well, nothing's happening. So why don't we try taking the pessary out? And then assessing what's going on. So I said, okay, fine. When shall I call Alfie? They're like, well, not yet, because you're nowhere near labor, it's fine. And this was now about 6 a.m. So to get the pessary out was like finding a needle in a haystack, according to, you know, I don't know why they couldn't find it, but maybe my cervix is huge or something. They tried, they failed. They were like, okay, I'll just try one more time. Let me try one more time. And I was like, okay, please, because I want to know where it is. They said, are you sure you didn't wee it out? And I was like, I definitely did not wee it out. They found it. She found it, this doctor. He was great. And she was like, okay, just breathe in. And then she yanked it out. And it was like a hook, a fishing hook. Oh my God. That was so bad. Sorry to put people off having a pessary. Maybe I'm very weak in this area, but she took out the pessary. As she yanked it out, my waters broke. So that was like a waterfall. And she was like, okay, good. Well, at least, you know, your water's broken now. So that's great. Let's see what happens. I guess you should think about calling Alfie now. So I did. Alfie was like, okay, cool. I'll just have a shower and then I'll come in. Because of Margot's experience of my waters, nothing happening after my waters broke, and with Donnie, he thought he had time to have a shower. He did not have time to have a shower, because within 2 minutes of my waters breaking, I was now having extreme contractions. Extreme. I like horrendous. I went on all fours. I tried to hold onto the top of the bed thing, and they gave me gas and air, which actually for the first time did do something. I was howling, and Alfie arrived as the head was out and kind of shocked by what was going on. And he was out within 45 minutes. He was out. And we had this 5 minutes of just, it was lovely. Alfie took a photo of me trying to feed him, but he didn't. I noticed that he was breathing quite fast. And I tried to be like, because there was only one midwife there at this point in the room, thinking everything was kind of fine. And I said, is that okay? He's breathing really fast. And she kind of went, yeah, I'll just go check. Let me just go get a doctor. Which terrified me. I took a photo of Alfie with the baby. We thought, okay, everything's fine, but why was he okay? Is he breathing quite fast? Basically, the doctor came in and said, okay, we're just going to get him up here. We're just going to give him a bit of this ventilator thing. I don't know what it was. But this baby was so strong, he was clinging on to the ventilator and basically doing pull-ups on the ventilator. I now knew something was wrong. So I got up, still bleeding, and stood next to him thinking, okay, well, he would have heard my voice for this time. He knows me. So maybe if I sing to him, it'll calm him down, because he was screaming. And I thought, oh, but the screaming is a good thing. It shows that he's, you know, he's got lungs, he's breathing, he's strong. But, oh, it was awful. And they said, okay, we're going to have to take him upstairs. And I said, but I don't think I delivered the placenta by this point. But within the hour of me having the pessary out and giving birth, within that hour, he was already on his way upstairs. So not ideal. But what I've learned, and I promise that on each of these podcast little pregnancy segment things, I won't just talk about traumatic births, because I don't want to put women off. What I've learned from speaking to other women, friends who've had babies, is that you can handle it. Whatever the case, you know, even if it sounds awful, most of the stories I've heard have been in some way awful, but the women have been strong. They've been fine. Their baby, the love for their baby is what shines through and keeps them going. And that definitely is what helped me, knowing that he was upstairs and I had a job to do. I would go up and down to him as many times as I could in the day. And luckily, we were lucky within 1 week we were out. But on those, the days felt like double days, triple days. I lost all semblance of time. And I also was missing Donnie and Margot so much. And that was awful, because they were fully expecting a baby to come back with them from, you know, they thought they would get back from school that day and the baby would be there. And that was anew for me to realize that my job now was to shepherd this little tiny baby back into health and home, which I thought might be weeks, maybe months. Some people had to stay in the neonatal unit for a long time. There were babies in the same room as 10 that had been in there since that summer. And I watched these women in their routines and coming in and cleaning their chairs. And it was so COVID safe, because it had to be, you know, you had to wipe down everything before you sat down. You had to clean your phone before you went in. You had to wash your hands about four times before you got into that room, one person at a time, which made it also horrendous, because it meant that me and Alfie could never actually be in the same place looking at our child until probably about day 5, which isn't normal. I think during non-COVID times, you two parents can be in there. And it was just an entirely humbling experience. And even though it was hell at points and terrifying, I'm so grateful that I experienced that, because I had no idea that world existed. I had no idea I had no concept of the neonatal unit. And now when I speak to women who've also gone through it, there's this kind of feeling of relief that somebody knows what you went through too. Even if you went through it for one day, you have an inkling of what it's like. And I just have such respect for people who've had to go through that. Okay. Well, there were so many things I wanted to talk about on the first episode. I didn't quite think I would go through each of my birth stories. But I'm glad I did, because it's quite a cathartic experience. And now you have a good insight into where I'm at with this child in me and what I'm hoping for when the birth experience comes round. I think I have no expectations. I don't think it's going to be a natural birth. I think I'm going to have to be induced, because if I've been induced 3 times, the likelihood is I'll probably be induced the 4th time. I think I'll be early again, because just have that feeling. And also, when you have a very active baby running around the place. I mean, my waters almost break a number of times a day, I think. The amount of times I have to lurch to save him from falling off a ladder or, I mean, the bunk bed ladder. He's not just going up ladders in our flat, but the amount of times a day I'm having to do really active stuff with him, surely they will break early, my waters, and I'll have to be induced. So I'm just trying to keep the baby inside me for as long as possible until it's a bit safer. So I'm aiming for 35 weeks, but, you know, could be sooner, could be later. Maybe it's going to be really late. But I have, you know, I'm just entirely grateful for this experience and to be doing it again. And I think that's why I want to talk about it in a more documented way this time around, because it's just, yeah, it's a really special time. It's stressful. It's scary. I'm nowhere near ready, but I'm really excited. And I think having a child is an act of hope. And for somebody who has such little hope in life, it is the one thing in my life which is entirely hopeful. I've said entirely too many times. I'm really sorry. I have noticed throughout doing the podcast with Bibi and Alfie that I do use the same words a lot, but that's because, you know, doing a podcast is difficult. Using lots of different words is difficult. Right, I'm going to end on something quite cheesy. I'm sorry, but it's an extract from a letter. So, as a busy working mother, I do, you know, I obviously want to read as much as I can, but I fall asleep by very quickly after reading a few pages a night. So I try and go for books that have very short chapters or books that are essays, or this is a collection of books. No, this is a collection of letters. Letters of note. And the collection is about mothers. And so each of the letters is either written from a son or a daughter to a mother, or a mother or daughter. You know what I mean? They're all motherhood related. Mothers to children. There we go. I think the baby's just about to wake up, but I'm going to go for it. So this is a letter in 1941 from Jessie Bernard to her unborn child. So Jessie Bernard was a sociologist and feminist, and she's a very clever woman. One of feminism's most important voices through the seminal books and articles for which she is now known, including The Future of Marriage and The Female World. I like the idea of The Future of Marriage. I might get that one. So basically, she did much of this as a single parent to her three children following the loss of her husband, Luther, to cancer in 1951, 6 months after the birth of their third child. Can you imagine? In 1941, aged 38 and pregnant with their first, which is quite late for 1941, isn't it? To have your first baby. Nowadays, that's bang on normal. That's a great age to have your first baby, I think. With their first, Jessie wrote their unborn daughter a letter. Then when Dorothy Lee was 1 month old, she wrote again. So I'm just going to read an extract because it's quite a long letter. But this bit I read spoke to me, and so many of the letters in this collection actually have made me cry. I am extremely hormonal and crying a lot more than usual in this pregnancy, but this really struck me for so many reasons, but mainly, well, you'll see why. I'm going to read it and then I'll explain. Okay. So this is, it starts with a dot, 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 which means, you know, I'm not reading from the beginning. You know, that's what a dot, dot, dot means. Okay. To me, the only answer a woman can make to the destructive forces of the world is creation. And the most ecstatic form of creation is the creation of new life. I have so many dreams for you. There are so many virtues I would endow you with if I could. First of all, I would make you tough and strong. And how I have labored at that. I have eaten vitamins and minerals instead of food. Gallons of milk, pounds of lettuce, dozens of eggs, hours of sunshine to make your body a strong one, because everything depends on that. I would give you resiliency of body so that all the blows and buffets of this world would leave you still unbeaten. I would have you creative. I would have you a creative scientist. But if the shuffling genes have made you an artist, that would make me happy too. And even if you have no special talent, either artistic or scientific, I would still have you creative, no matter what you do, to build things, to make things, to create. This is what I covet for you. If you have a strong body and a creative mind, you will be happy. I will help in that. That's it. Then I'm going to end with a dot, dot, dot again. Dot, 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 because it does continue. Anyway, I love that so much because I think that's what I long for my children, is for them to be creative and strong. Because making things, the ability to make things out of happiness, out of sadness, out of trauma, out of anything is going to see you through life. And it might be crazy for me to be having a fourth baby. You know, I'm one of five. My mum's done it. My mum's the most amazing mother, and I've learned from her. I've seen that she can do, she did it. So I think that's why I'm choosing to. But yeah, creativity is something I really, really want for them, even if it's in tiny different ways. I mean, Donnie wants to be a coder at this point. Is that creative? You tell me. Anyway, I'm going to leave you now, but I'm going to be back each week throughout this pregnancy, as long as it lasts, with Whenever It Kicks. Thank you for listening.